It's the D-O-double-G, the road dog, Jesse James, and by my side, as always, is that B-A-double-D-A, double crooked letter, badass Billy Gunn. Together we are the New Age Outlaws, and you're listening to the VOC Nation, and if you ain't down with that, he's got two words for you. Suck it.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the host and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, who you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer The Maestro, Wes Briscoe, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter, too, at VOC Nation.
Podcast. My name is CT McManus, and for the next 2 hours, it's my job to get your mind off the world out there and refocus in on some good old-fashioned rock and roll. We have a phenomenal show for you this evening, guys. Very, very excited to bring out Brian Forsyth, the legendary guitar player for both Rhino Bucket and Kix. Really excited to talk to him, man. It's going to be a great time. Glad you're aboard. Wanted to give a shout out to my boy in Phoenix Custom Printing. Guys, any of your rock merchandise that you need to have to prepare for upcoming shows once everything breaks through, and if you're playing shows now, Phoenix Custom Printing is the place to go, guys. They have everything you could imagine available, and if you mention to them that you're a Rock and Roll Union member, you get 20% off your entire order. That phone number is 410-206-2081. Once again, that phone number is 410-206-2081. Or you can reach them on email, phoenixcustominc@gmail.com. Guys, a lot of good stuff coming up on board. We've been mentioning it on the Facebook page. A lot of bigger names coming up that you guys are going to want to be here for. So just remember, if you miss any of the episodes, you're able to find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. So just another little heads up. We're coming up into February, which means that is our third birthday. The Rock and Roll Union, in lieu of having a big birthday bash because of COVID, we decided that we're doing things a little bit differently this year. There's going to be a major contest dropped on February 1st. You're going to want to keep an eye out for that, with a lot of prizes and some good stuff in store for that one. So you guys are definitely going to want part. It's going to be a fun time for that. And In honor of Brian coming on, here's Little Kicks now with Don't Close Your Eyes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, this is Total Package, Lex Luger, and you're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Cassie Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into like snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Wrestling with History, the voice of choice, and Killer Ken Resnick.
When I die, they're going to open me up and find about 2,000 undigested Northwest Airline cheese omelets.
Mr. Chris Cruz, what's going on?
Jesus, how did I get roped into this?
General Adnan went to school with Saddam Hussein.
He cried, I cried, he cried, and who could have cried?
Adnan lost a lot of family in the Iraqi war.
Everybody loves Granny.
Wow. Yeah, see, a lot of people don't know that.
Yes, Taylor, you guys are busting me up.
Catch Wrestling with History with Ken Resnick and I live on VOCNation.com Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time, or listen to the podcast by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app.
Stadium Journey, the worldwide leader in stadium reviews for the traveling sports fan, is proud to present the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation. Join us as we talk with prominent figures from around the sports world to discuss issues pertaining to sports travel and stadiums around the globe. New episodes air on VOC Nation Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Join Paul Baker, Dave Cartney, Mark Viquez, Dan Calachico, and guests from throughout the sports world on the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Yo, this is Jerry Steins of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You getting ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby, because it's about to get nasty all around and up in this mother. Get ready. Nasty Sensation is coming at you.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Rock and Roll Union Podcast, guys. And like I said, tonight we are being joined by Brian Forsyth, man. Going to be a great interview. Really looking forward to talking to Brian about all his history with Kix and Rhino Bucket and what he's been doing since the world stopped. So we'll be talking all that. But for now, we're going to go ahead and listen to Rhino Bucket, Beat to Death Like a Dog. We'll be right back. By Rhino Bucket. Guys, it is my extreme honor and pleasure to welcome Mr. Brian Forsythe to the Rock and Roll Union. Brian, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, man, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Got a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about, but how have you been through this whole crisis and ever since the world stopped? How you been keeping time?
Well, I've got a lot of free time. Well, actually, it started out with a lot of free time, but then I figured out how to fill it. So now I'm like getting behind on everything. But for me, it was kind of nice to have some time off.
I believe it. And I know you guys are constantly touring, constantly doing shows. And as far as this whole pandemic has been concerned, do you think there's any light at the end of the tunnel? Do you think there's any positives to take away from all this?
Well, I think the light at the end of the tunnel is there. I mean, we still have dates on the calendar and it's mostly dates from this past year pushed into this year. So, you know, I still have my fingers crossed as to whether we'll actually do the dates, but, I'm sure eventually we'll be able to play again. We did have there were like a handful of shows that we got to do in 2020, that just sort of popped up after our calendar got wiped clean. So
yeah,
we did get to play a few shows.
Good, man. As a fan, it gets a little frustrating waiting for that live connection again. So I'm sure as a band, it's probably just as bad, if not worse. But I want to discuss so much about your career, and I wanted to start from the very beginning. After being together for a very short time, you guys were signed early on. How did that come about, and what did you contribute to it as far as several other bands on the circuit, I'm sure, were vying for that competition? What made Kick stand out at that point?
I guess we did kind of get signed pretty quickly, because we finally got the full lineup. We got Jimmy and Steve. I guess it was it was probably in 79. So, you know, then we got signed in 81. But the way that we did it was there was another band in Baltimore called Face Dancer that had a record out on Capitol. So we pursued their manager, and we got their manager to manage us. And
nice.
He's the one that got us the record deal.
That's awesome.
This is how we actually got it. Was, you know, we had some formal demos that we had recorded, but our manager, we had a habit of taping every show. Started out with just cassette recordings in the old days. Like our sound man had a cassette recorder at the soundboard, and he would stick a cassette in at the beginning of every night. And we'd record the shows, and then we could listen back and see where we needed to fix stuff. And when our manager started coming around, he started taking those tapes and just sending those live board tapes out. And that's how we got signed, from a live tape.
Wow. And not only do you guys get signed, you're given free reins to that first album to do it any way that you guys want to do it. Which is it's a bit of a gamble as far as a label is concerned. What made them feel as comfortable as they did to just let you guys run with it?
That's actually a good question. But I think it was just that, they sent the A&R guy down to check us out at a club in Waldorf, Maryland. And I think he just saw the energy that we had live, and they figured that they could try to capture that on the first record. So that's pretty much how that happened, I think. And then I guess once we did that, then they tried to take control after that, but
yeah.
they just kind of let us go on that first one.
Now, on the second album, you guys follow the freshman release with Cool Kids, and the label takes over, like you were saying, a little bit more due to the sales of the first one. Were you guys disheartened by them getting involved with that, and did it kind of take away from the feel of the first album for you guys?
Yeah, they were trying to encourage us to write singles, you know, that whole thing. And at first, you know, we just thought that's the way it was, because, you know, it was all of our first record contract. So we were still trying to figure out how to play the game, you know, and we just figured that's the way you do it. So we went along with them. But then once the record was done, you know, and Pyromania came out, and we're going, oh man, you know, that's the record we should have made, you know, after making Cool Kids, which, you know, there's still some good songs on that record, but we were disappointed with it. We just thought it was a little bit kind of wimpy and poppy.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, did you guys feel like it wasn't your stuff because you had so much of them putting their self into it as far as writing and things like that?
Yeah, well, we had three outside songs that we did, you know, like Cool Kids, Body Talk and Burning Love were outside songs, which are, that's a lot of songs for one record, I think.
Right.
But I think all of our own stuff that we had, it was still Kicks.
Hell yeah. Now, Midnight Dynamite comes next. There were several writers who contributed, including Kip Winger, John Palumbo, and the album just celebrated its 35th anniversary and was given a remixed release, which just came out. Was it just the anniversary that made you guys want to put this out, or is this a favorite of the band's? What made that album special for you guys?
Well, it was partially the anniversary, but the other thing was, you know, Bo Hill had been coming around, like when we'd play, he lives in Austin. So when we would play anywhere down in Texas, he would come to the shows and hang out and he would talk to us. And this is before he even did Blow My Fuse. He was talking about wanting to try to remix, like, well, Blow My Fuse for one thing. And then, and after he did that, he was like, well, I would love to do Midnight Dynamite again. And nobody thought about, we just figured that, you know, Blow My Fuse did have a few issues with the mix. So, you know, that was kind of a no brainer, but we figured that, you know, Bo was proud of the Midnight Dynamite one. So we were surprised when he wanted to remix it. And I wasn't actually there when they talked about it, but it was Jimmy and Mark, I think, were at the hotel bar with Bo when he brought it up. And they go, really? We thought that record was already as good as it could get. And Bo goes, no, I think I can beat that mix. So that's how that came around. So, I think Bo really wanted to do that. He's been wanting to do that since he recorded it.
That's awesome. And then the fourth album is the one that changes everything for you guys, Blow My Fuse. And but it didn't start out like that as far as it being widely distributed the way that it was, or being as big of an album as it was for you guys. What do you remember most about that time? And did you guys really think that this is the next one?
Yeah, it was weird because with each record that we recorded, it kept getting better. The songs were better, and we had new management for Blow My Fuse. So, yeah, we felt that we were sort of getting to the next step when we did that record. And, you know, we did have success before Don't Close Your Eyes. You know, we had Cold Blood on MTV,
right,
and it ended up being like the most requested video and all this stuff. So that was good up to that point. And it wasn't until right at the end, when we were doing that Tesla Great White tour, the record company, they informed us that it was, they weren't going to give us any more tour support, and that we had to start thinking about the new record. And they were kind of, it was over for that record at that point. But I'm sure you've heard the story. Great White's manager, Alan Niven, heard us doing Don't Close Your Eyes every night. And one night when our manager was at one of the shows, he asked them, he goes, how come that's never been released as a single? You know, and I guess our manager had asked about it, but Atlantic goes, nah, you know, the record's done, you know, start thinking about the next one. So Alan Niven, and at the time, you know, he had Great White, but he also had Guns N' Roses. So he was this huge, you know, he had all this clout. So
right.
He goes, would you mind if I ask them? And so our manager said, yeah, be my guest. And he went to Atlantic and told them that they'd be crazy if they didn't release that song. And they listened to him. And, you know, if it weren't for him, that song would never have been a single. So
right.
It's crazy it's weird how record companies, you know, sometimes they just don't, they're just not paying attention sometimes.
Now, at that time, I mean, there were so many ballads at that point, different bands doing ballads, but what stood out was the meaning behind Don't Close Your Eyes. And was that something that you guys kind of held special to? Is it something that, I mean, it definitely for the fans, it differentiates it from any other kind of ballad that was out at that time.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, Donnie wrote it, so it was more personal to him. So, you know,
right.
I can't really say what inspired it or anything like that. I mean, you'd have to ask him, but.
And the industry is completely different today, and the big labels are gone. Artists have more control, be it good or bad, over their music. And sales, bookings, et cetera, they have all reign on that now. And do you think this is something good or is it bad? Because though Blow My Fuse was a great success, eventually reaching double platinum status, you guys owed a lot of money to the record industry at that point. Do you think the rules have, how they have changed, are better for the scene, or was it better with the labels, do you think?
That's a good question. You know, there was some good stuff about the labels. Yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff too. it's hard to say because, yeah, bands have more musical freedom now, but the problem is they don't have the finances, you know,
right,
to back it up like you do with a record company. But, you know, but then again, the record company is like a loan shark. You know,
yeah.
Once you sign, it's like, you know, you're signing your life away and you hardly get anything out of it, and they get everything, you know. So it seems like a good idea, but they do put you know, the money up for the records and the producers and all that stuff. And now it's like, you know, unless a band has like rich parents or, you know, somebody that's willing to invest in them, it's hard to get all that stuff in place. But, you know, but then again, like home recordings are a lot easier now because of the technology with Pro Tools and all that stuff. So a lot of people have home studios and they can put out music that, you know, it sounds like it was done in a studio. So I don't know. It's all over the place. It's hard to I mean, it's so different now.
Yeah.
That, I can't hardly even wrap my head around it sometimes.
Now, the one thing that I hear constantly, and we've talked about it many times on this show before, was the difference of how things are in the United States versus things overseas. I know you talked in great lengths previously about your first tour in Japan, and you guys loved being there. Is it still the same way? Is overseas better as far as you're concerned, as far as the rock scene?
Well, I haven't been to Japan for a while, but I have been over to Europe several times with Rhino Bucket. And yes, it's way different over there. You can, like, especially a place like Germany, you can play 7 nights a week and fill the club. Like here in the United States, you're lucky to get weekend gigs. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot harder here in the United States to tour.
And I wanted to go back to the next album that came out was Hotwire, and things started falling apart around that time. You started playing with folks outside the band, but you had also developed a bad drug habit that you've spoken about before. I personally have lost 2 older brothers to drug addiction, so I know the whole gamut of that. What were you looking like at those times, and what like how much were you taking at that time that you got kind of felt like you hit rock bottom?
Well, it wasn't until I left the band that all that kind of happened.
Gotcha.
With Hotwire, I was still actually Ronnie right around when Blow My Fuse came out, Ronnie got sober, and him and I were kind of roommates on the road. We'd share a hotel room. So I actually stopped doing drugs and drinking right around the same time Ronnie did in '89.
Awesome.
Even though even though he was like, you know, he went through the 12-step recovery and all that stuff. I was just hanging on by, I was white knuckling it the whole time, but I didn't drink for like 4.5 years. It didn't take any drugs until I left the band and I wasn't around Ronnie anymore. And I was out in LA on my own. And, you know, I was uneducated about the disease and all that stuff. So that all happened after Hotwire.
Gotcha. But you would say, from what you just said, it's that having that support person's critical for anyone looking to get off.
Yeah, it's always good to have somebody around that somebody you can hang with that's also sober. I mean, that saved me after I finally did get sober in 98. I remember when the first few times I went out to see bands at clubs, I was like terrified. So I would take another guy, a sober guy with me, and we'd just hang out together. So that really helps, yeah.
And so you guys, you reunited in 2003, which is already 18 years ago. It's unbelievable to think about that. How did the reunion happen, and how has it been since you guys have been together? I mean, 18 years, you guys basically had two different careers at this point.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because when I left the band in 93, it had been 18 years for me. That's how long I had been in the band. So, yeah, it's crazy to think that now it's another 18 years. But, yeah, that whole between 93 and 2003, I did go back and do the show business record, but as a hired outside person. I wasn't part of the band at that point. But,
right.
Yeah. After that, I just forgot about Kicks. Like people would say, hey, what band did you play in? And I, whatever current band I was in at the time, like out in LA, I just say that, like, you know, I was in a blues band called the Purple Gang. So, if, you know, and I think they thought I was the guy from Kicks, but they weren't sure. And then they go, what band did you play with? And I go, oh, the Purple Gang. And they just look at me and go, oh, I never heard of them. But so I kind of just, I kind of just forgot about the whole Kicks thing for the longest time. I just never thought that it would ever come back around. And then at some point I talked to Steve, or Steve called me and wanted to know if, at that point he had Funny Money together, and Ronnie's got his band, the Blues Vultures, and they used to play shows together. And at the end of the night, Ronnie would jump up on stage with Steve and Jimmy, and they would run through a few kick songs and the crowd would go crazy. So Steve calls me up and goes, hey, he goes, what would you think about like flying back here and like showing up at one of those gigs and like as a surprise and just jump up there when Ronnie comes up on stage and we could sort of do this little reunion thing. And he said that the promoters were willing to pay a little bonus money if I could do that. And so that's how the idea started. It didn't actually happen that way, but it did get us talking. And finally Steve and I were just like, well, why don't we just try it for real? Like put it back together. So that's how it happened. And it ended up, our first shows were during the holidays at, 2003. And at that point, we weren't sure if we should call it Kicks or not. So we were calling it, what were we calling it? 4/5 of Kicks. And it was just a reunion show. And it was just, we just did it. We thought, well, let's just do it and see if it's like, just have some fun and make a little bit of money. And so it was just sort of like, you know, we thought we'd do a few shows and that'd be it. But every time we did a show, it was just jam-packed, sold out. So we just kept extending it. Like we did the holidays in 2003, then we did another bunch of shows in the fall of 2004, and then another holiday run, and it just kept going like that. And we kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it never did. It just kept getting bigger and bigger. So we expanded and got a real booking agent, and then he sent us out, you know, outside of the area, and we started playing out, you know, all over the place, and it just expanded from there. And I mean, we were really surprised, and we're still surprised. You know, it's amazing that it's still going.
And I mean, talking about shows, I want to pick your brain a little bit about the whole M3 festival. And you guys headline every Friday night of the festival. And from, you know, some of us fans talk, and one of the things I remember when I first started going to the festival was that you guys had a hand in helping to create that. Is there any truth to that?
You mean the whole M3 festival?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, we were part of it from the beginning, but we didn't really help create it or anything, but we did, I guess, we kind of gave them a reason to add that Friday night. 'Cause at first it was just a Saturday.
Gotcha.
And we, every time we play, we'd pack them in. And then when we get off stage, the crowd would like thin out. So they thought, like we should, you know, give those guys a, you know, a headlining slot on the Friday. So that's how that came around.
Well, it was, I mean, that's your hometown. That's where it kick started. I think that's the whole allure for you guys that night. And it's me from not being from that area. It is really nice to see you guys Friday night. And, any thoughts on hopefully when we get back to M3? I mean, do you have any prediction? I mean, they're hopefully doing it this year, but I mean, nobody can nail down anything right now.
I know. It's crazy. Everything's up in the air. That is actually on the calendar, but you know, who knows what'll happen when it gets closer? Because that's sort of how it's been going. When we get about a month out, then stuff starts getting moved again. So, yeah, you just never know. It's hard to plan ahead these days.
Yeah, it really is. And I've seen it firsthand, shows that are set up or taken down the next day, and it's frustrating right now. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Rhino Bucket and what made Rhino Bucket such a separate escape kind of for you. And what made that band different than Kix?
That's a good question too. Well, I had been playing during the 90s. I was, like I mentioned, that blues band I played in. I played in a couple other bands, and it just so happened that Reeves, Rhino Bucket's bass player, was in every single band that I was playing with. It seemed like we were just like we were like a team. And, so at the end of the 1990s, George enters the picture, and Rhino Bucket, I think they fell apart around 95. So they had just, you know, recently fallen apart. So when George came around, he wanted to put together a project, but not call it Rhino Bucket. So that's kind of what got it started. And we put together a batch of songs, and then we did some shows, and then that's when I ended up going to jail, and that whole thing fell apart because I got taken out of it. So when I got through rehab and got sober, all of a sudden George calls me back up and he goes, "Hey, Ricky Rackman wants to do this cat house night at this club in Hollywood. He wants Rhino Bucket to play. Would you want to be interested in playing guitar?" Cause the original guy, Greg, didn't want to do it. And I said, "Sure, I'll do it." And, so I learned all their old songs, and I was just going to do that gig and maybe another gig that was after that. And then once I did the gigs, it was like, well, I already know the songs. I might as well keep on doing this. And then we started working on, originals, like new songs. And we ended up getting a movie soundtrack. And the next thing I know, I'm in Rhino Bucket. Like, I hadn't really even thought about joining them officially, but I just sort of, it was almost like going out with a girl, and the next thing you know, that's your girlfriend, you know, without even, it was kind of like one of those situations. But it turned out to be cool because I love playing with those guys. And you asked, you know, what makes it different than Kix? You know, there's a lot of similarities as far as like the energy and all that, but it's a little bit more specialized. Like Kix is kind of a broad thing. Is there's some AC/DC and Kix, and there's some Aerosmith. There's, you know, a lot of different influences. Cheap Trick, but Rhino Bucket is almost like this very AC/DC influenced.
Yeah,
just straight ahead raw. And there's something, I don't know, there's something about that. It really fits my style, for one thing. Like with Kix, a lot of times I have to sort of adapt to the song, and which is, it's a challenge, and I guess it challenges my guitar playing. But with Rhino Bucket, it was just right in the pocket. I didn't have to think about it. It was like second nature. And the other thing is, you know, George plays rhythm guitar and sings, so I was like the sole lead guitar player, which gave me a little bit of freedom too.
Right, right. And I mean, I gotta say, the Rhino Bucket sound was, like you said, it was AC/DC. It was early Malcolm, Bon Scott era type AC/DC, and.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, as far as influences were concerned, because you say you have to adapt a little bit for Cheap Trick. I mean, for Kix, rather, I'm sorry. As far as Kix, and you have to adapt, but where do your influences come from? Who are your favorite guitar players?
Well, I started early on. I mean, I came up through the 60s and 70s. So, you know, like... one of my early influences is of course like Eric Clapton, but the person that made the biggest influence on my rock guitar playing was Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
Yes,
I
sir.
Love Billy Gibbons. And then when, and a lot of the, and the, all the Southern rock guys like Dickie Betts and the Lynyrd Skynyrd guys, like all that stuff that was a huge influence on my playing. And then later on, you know, when AC/DC came around and I heard Angus, it was like, wow, it almost sounded like a ramped up version of Billy Gibbons. Like they're really similar in their styles, and that's what attracted me to it, you know. So yeah, so that's kind of the scaled down version of all my influences, but I have so many of them, it's hard to name all of them.
Now, one question I definitely wanted to ask you, and I kick this question around a lot just because it's the taboo subject. How do you adhere to or maybe refrain from, like, Gene Simmons' quote, rock and roll is dead? Do you view that the same way? I mean, it's completely different. We talked about that as far as the scene and the ability to make albums, but what is your view on today's rock and roll scene?
Yeah, it is different, and it's a lot more diluted than when I first started. And I think it was Joe Perry that said, you know, the further this goes, the further we get away from the root, like the root of the music, which was in the 50s, you know, that's where it started. And so the longer it goes, there's so many more influences that get dumped into it. And which, you know, it's not a bad thing, but it's hard to make it into a scene kind of thing because everybody's all over the place. But I don't know. As far as modern music, it's, for me, I have a hard time with it. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting old or, you know, it's like there are still some really good bands that pop up here and there, but most of it I can't even stomach.
Right.
Maybe I'm not as open-minded as I used to be when I was younger.
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you as far as the overall picture of the popular stuff. I think there's a lot of great music out there, but I think you kind of got to go searching for it. I feel like rock and roll has kind of become the bruise on the arm of society again. It's not commercialized where it was before.
Yeah. As far as modern music, it's like really formulated, I mean, I can't even tell who's who anymore half the time, but, But the other thing that kind of messes it up is the technology, you know, the whole Pro Tools and the ability to make everything perfect. It just kind of takes the soul out of the sound. Like the early 70s, if you listen to some of those records, some of them aren't even in tune, but it gives it that earthy, like, organic sound that's missing.
Right.
Now it sounds just sterile and mechanical, and, you know, it's just not the same.
So a lot of older bands, I know you guys aren't doing it, but a lot of older bands are relying on backtracking and different things like that. What are your views on that?
Well, it depends on how you use it, really. I mean, we always used a little bit of that, like especially percussion parts or say like keyboard parts. We have some
right.
of that stuff, like for Don't Close Your Eyes. Yeah, it just depends on how a band, if a band uses it like as a crutch, like if you took it away and they sounded horrible, you know, if that was their main part of their sound, then yeah, that's not good. I mean, a band has to be able to pull it off without that, you know.
And I also wanted to ask you, you know, it's been basically 40 years for Kix. What's next for you guys? And when do you guys feel like, if you feel it at all, if there's ever a time to wrap it up?
Well, personally, I'm not going to quit. I'm in this for life. If it weren't for Kix, I'd still be playing with somebody, but no, we don't have any plans for retiring anytime soon anyway, but we're just going to keep trying to, you know, as soon as we get through this whole pandemic thing, like who could have seen that coming? That was kind of weird, but I mean, we were just getting on a roll when that happened, and it put the brakes on everything. So, you know, once we get up and running again, we're just going to, I think, keep running with it as far as we can.
Hell yeah. I mean, I honestly got to say the energy is still there. It's still a blast watching you guys. And is there any, have you guys talked to each other or done any kind of Zoom meetings during this whole mess? Have you gotten together and practiced at all?
Not, we have done a couple of Zoom meetings just to talk to each other, but I know it's kind of weird. We had all this downtime, but we didn't like do any recording or anything, but I think it's just because we didn't really have anything together to record yet. And, and I, you know, and I live in Nashville, and it's hard to get together these days.
And,
so,
go ahead, man.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, we've talked about doing some new music at some point, but it just didn't happen during this time when we could have done it. I don't know why.
Yeah, that was my next question. It had been like 4 years since you guys had a new legitimate recording. Are you guys any plans as far as getting something new out there?
Yeah, we had definitely talked about it, but you know, the Blow My Fuse thing came along, and then the Midnight Dynamite remix came along. So these little things keep pushing it a little further out. And, you know, we're not in a hurry, and we don't want to just throw something out to throw something out there. Like, you know, we felt that Rock Your Face Off was really good for, you know, we were really scared going into that, thinking, are we going to be able to do this without Donnie? But we seemed to pull it off. We pulled it off. So the next one has to be, you know, as good or better than that. We can't just throw something out there. So
I want to ask while we're talking about this, do you have any thoughts as far as, I mean, we've already said that the formula has changed in today's music. What are your thoughts as far as getting full-length albums out there? There's a lot of bands out there that are just releasing singles, and other bands look at albums as almost like the creation of a child. How do you guys, what do you view on that subject?
Yeah, you know, I have not really thought about that, except that, I guess we've just always – we come from the old school, you know, put out a record with 10 songs on it. But I don't know. I don't see anything wrong with putting out singles. I mean, I guess nowadays, because of the streaming and all that, it's just nice to be able to put out a package, the actual physical package,
right.
You know.
And, you know, I'm one of those old heads, same as, and it's something about having the package in your hand and being able to look through the leaflet that came in, either the CD or the I still collect vinyl, and it's something about holding that package, I think, that kind of unites a lot of us.
Yeah, and that's and even now when I do buy music, occasionally I'll buy a single song from, like, you know, iTunes or something. But if I really like a band and I want their record, I'll buy the CD or even the vinyl. You know, I still buy vinyl too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do a lot of streaming, but if I buy physical copy, yeah, I'm doing vinyl. Just I think it sounds so much better on vinyl. How big into vinyl are you? Like, how much are you collecting of vinyl? Like, what's your favorites?
Well, I don't know if I'm big into it, but I've bought a few, you know, recently in the last, 10 years or more, I've bought a few newer vinyls, but I still have all my old vinyls. So, you know, I've hung on to all that stuff. So I've got unfortunately, you know, after I moved to Nashville, I have there's not any bookshelves in this house, and I haven't gotten around to building any, so I have nowhere to put my albums. So they're still all in boxes.
Man, now are you doing anything outside of Kix? Are you doing any kind of jamming with anybody else, any kind of solo stuff, or are you doing anything outside of the band?
Not really at the moment. You know, Rhino Bucket's sort of on hold right now. I do stuff. I record stuff here and there with people. Like, I'm in the process of doing how many songs is it? 4 songs or so for Eddie Spaghetti from Super Suckers is doing a record with this guy in LA named Frank Meyer.
Nice.
And they're calling it Spaghetti and Frank, the record. So they got me to play on like four songs, I think, 4 or 5, I forget. But they're doing a cover of Heartache, and that's what got them to get me interested. So I recorded Heartache so far, and one other one, but I still got a few left to do on that. And then I've been doing here and there. I'll get people reach out to me to do some songs and then we release these videos where it's like a virtual video where everybody's in their own space playing.
Awesome.
I've done a few of those too, just some random cover songs here and there.
Now, I know one other thing that you do that I've read about, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about it, was you're also into cooking, am I right?
Oh yeah, I love food and I love to cook.
Anything in particular you would say is your kind of specialty?
Well, right now I'm into meat. I was pescatarian for years. Basically vegetarian with fish. And
gotcha.
And about three years ago or so, 3.5 years ago, I really got into exercise, you know, like the health. I got into to nutrition and all that stuff. And I realized that I was missing all these nutrients that meat provides. So I decided to start eating meat again. And at first I did the keto thing and, you know, to cut out the sugar and carbs.
Right.
And then after that, I honed it down even further. And now I'm like carnivore. All I eat is strictly animal products. So if it doesn't come from an animal, I don't eat it.
When you went from that pescatarian, or what the term was, but when you went from that to eating meat, did your body respond any certain way? I've heard stories of people maybe getting sick or.
No, I didn't get sick. I actually, because I've been trying to get physically healthy. I've been working out ever since Kix got back together. you know, I saw Steve, and Steve was in such good shape. I was like, wow, I better do something. So I started getting into shape. About that time, I started exercising again. But it just didn't seem to be making a dent. But when I started the first 2 weeks, like within 2 weeks of starting to eat meat again, it was almost like all my workouts, it just kicked it into overdrive. And all of a sudden, I could see the difference. I could feel the difference. I mean, it was huge. It's hard to describe, but it was almost like my body going, like, what were you thinking all these years? It's like my body was just waiting for me to eat a steak, you know?
So, like, you said you eat all animal product. Like, so what does a meal look like if you're on the same kind of plan that you're on?
Well, like a typical meal for me is like steak and eggs, like a big ribeye steak. You know, a couple of eggs and some bacon, and that's it.
Gotcha.
Really?
Gotcha. So you don't do any vegetables, any starches, nothing?
No, I haven't. Not in close to 2 years now.
Wow. Now, do you find yourself having more energy with what you're doing?
Yeah, most of the time. There's been a couple lulls where I, you know, go through a period where it was like, man, what's up with me? How come I'm so tired? And then I'd realize my electrolytes were off or something, and I have to adjust
gotcha.
All that stuff.
I also wanted to ask you, as far as young up-and-coming musicians and bands and anything along that line, any kind of advice that you would give to anybody that's up-and-coming?
Well, in this day and age, well, I guess the basic advice would be like, would be for somebody to not give up, you know, like for me as a musician, it didn't really come like completely natural, like it does for some people. I really had to work hard at it. And I had doubts at the beginning. Like I didn't think I was ever going to figure it out. And really the best advice I can give is never give up, no matter what anyone else says around you. And the other thing is stay true to yourself. Like, don't try to especially when it comes to songs and stuff like that, don't try to guess what you think people want to hear. Just play what you feel, and they'll come around eventually if it's good enough, you know? Did I leave
that,
you?
No,
oh, there
can
you
hear
are.
Me? Sorry.
Yeah.
But one thing that I want to say as far as what you just said in Kix is
I think I'm losing you. You keep cutting out.
Hold on for one. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. As far as Kix, you guys have a big following. Everybody loves to come out to the shows and see Kix. And I've noticed that you guys don't have a lot of chart toppers, a lot of like commercial success in that aspect, but everybody coming out still knows all the music. What do you contribute that to?
Well, I guess I guess it's because back in the old days when you had records, you know,
yep.
People would get all the songs. They wouldn't just buy one off iTunes. But, I mean, there's that. And you know, we toured relentlessly, especially back in the old days. I mean, it was just like nonstop. So, you know, we've built up a big following. And that really helps. I mean, nowadays, and that's the other thing nowadays, it's like there's hardly anywhere to play and –
yeah.
You know, bands don't really get to tour and unless they're big, you know, but I mean, we just did it like old school, like the Ramones, like in a van with a Ryder truck full of gear. And we just drive, just circle the country, just playing and playing and playing. And it pays off in the end, you know.
Absolutely. And the last question I want to ask you, Brian, is there's been a shift in venues from what there used to be the big arenas and most of the bands that were out there would play the big arenas. Now bands that are playing to massive crowds in Europe or other places overseas are playing small venues here. Do you prefer the small venues, or do you guys like the bigger venues? Where are you most comfortable?
I mean, the big venues are cool because of the, you know, the huge crowd. You get to look out there and go, wow. But I'm at home at either place, but I really – there's something about a small little sweaty bar that just sounds so good. Like when I'm on stage, it's just like close, like the walls are close, the ceiling's close, and it just has this sound to it that I love. And you kind of lose that on a big stage. It's a little more hectic and, you know, it's a big open space. So it's,
right.
It's harder to hear stuff. But, you know, I wouldn't – it's hard to say. I mean, I'll do either. I don't care.
Right, right. And it's just – to me, it kind of – you know, I started questioning it a little bit because I feel – badly for the band sometimes when you see they're playing Wembley or something overseas and then they're playing a small little place here, and it just speaks to me volumes as far as the fandom in the United States as far as rock is concerned lately.
Yeah, I know. It is kind of weird. But, you know, you have to give it to the bands that do that, that they're willing to do that, because you have to be willing to do that, to jump from one, you know, one scene to the other. And we did that our whole career. We'd get a tour, you know, an arena tour with a band. And then when that was done, we'd go right back to playing clubs again.
Now, were you guys, when everything shut down, were you guys in the middle of a tour? Who were you playing with?
It was just, you know, our regular thing. We our calendar was completely full. I mean, 2020 was going to be a great year as far as gigs. But our style of touring these days is they're fly dates. So, you know, we'll have a weekend somewhere, like two dates that are close to each other. We'll fly into, say, like if it's in the Midwest, like say fly into Minneapolis and then drive and do a gig. One gig and then drive to like Chicago and do another gig and then fly home. So
right.
That's usually, it's usually like weekends. And then during the week we're all at home. So it's not like the old days where you're just out there all the time.
I hear you.
Unless you're Rhino Bucket and you're in Europe, then it's like 7 days a week.
You said you guys were on hold. Are we looking at, are you guys going to get back together with Rhino Bucket at some point, or are we looking at a permanent hiatus? What's the status for Rhino Bucket?
Well, it did kind of shut down there for a minute, but then I fairly recently I've had a few phone calls with George, and I think he's getting a little antsy again. So we were talking about putting some new songs together. So it looks like we may do another record and maybe another European tour at some point.
Oh, that'd be awesome. So, Brian, thank you so much for being on tonight, man. I know you got all kinds of stuff going, and just wanted to just tell you how grateful I was that you came on the show tonight. Please keep me informed of everything that you guys are doing, and hoping to see you back out on the road soon.
Yeah, I hope we get out there soon. And I know there's a lot of fans that have been bummed this past year because they haven't been able to see us or anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. So
thank you so much, Brian. You have a great night, and keep in touch.
All right. Good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. Thank you. Have a great night.
All right.
Bye-bye. Guys, that was Brian Forsyth, man. Very, very happy and blessed to have had him on the show. We're going to listen to a little bit of Kix. This is off the latest remix. This is Bang Bang, Balls of Fire. We'll be right back.
This is Lance Storm, and if I can be serious for a minute, you're listening to VOC Nation Worldwide.
VOC Nation is one of the longest-running wrestling podcast networks, having started way back in 2010. VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts also include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. Both shows take callers live during the show, and recent guests have included General Adnan, Tito Santana, Haku, Earl Hebner, Danger Sandy Davis, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Brodus Clay, and so many more. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Hola, this is your amiga, Shelly from Cali, to let you know you can catch me here on VOC Nation for Shelly Live. You never know what the hell I'm going to be talking about. Sometimes I have guests. Sometimes I let you on in the cheese mess, spill a little tea. Sometimes I cry. You have to tune in to find out why. And I also take your calls. I love chatting with you guys and seeing what the hell you guys are thinking. So meet me here on the VOC Nation. Be there or be square.
Rock and Roll Union for the past 2 years has been the place for rock and roll, new rock and roll, debuting rock and roll, and some of the old classics as well. We have welcomed guests from around the world, national artists and more. We have excited many people by our live events. We've welcomed everybody into the fold, and we continue to do so on a weekly basis. Guys, that is Rock and Roll Union, and that is what we do for you.
Saturdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, VOCNation.com. Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro, talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out. VOCNation.com. WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Rock and Roll Union Podcast, guys. I want to say a big thank you to our guests this evening, Brian Forsyth of Kix and Rhino Bucket. And you heard it here that Rhino Bucket may be getting another album out there, so we'll have to wait and see what happens. So just to touch base a little bit on some up-and-coming things, the Rock and Roll Union birthday celebration is coming up in February. We're going to have a contest, a writing contest. You'll see more details coming, and going to be a great time for everybody. Prizes and a lot of good stuff. Next week, our guest on the show is going to be local guys, man. Really got to give the shout out to the local guys. Next week, we'll be having Castle Bravo in the house, and looking forward to talking to them guys, and we'll see where they're at. South Jersey guys, man. So, want to say a big thank you to joining us this evening, guys. And just remember to be kind to each other. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. And much love, guys. And until next time, remember, rock and roll. Have a good week, guys.